Welcome in to the Secondary Podcast with your hosts, Dustin Schutte and Brant Patz. Welcome into another edition of the Secondary Podcast with Dustin Schutte and Brant Patz. A lot has happened since the last time we talked, about 2 weeks ago. And mainly, Brant, we were just a whole bunch of wrong based on the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I thought I had such a great bracket, and then right after the first game, I realized how very wrong I was, as well, usual.
We talked about how we didn't see that this was going to be a tournament which would see a lot of upsets, and now you've got an 11 seed in the Final Four with Loyola Chicago.
A 16 seed beating a 1, multiple 13 seeds beating 4 seeds. It was just chaos.
I will preface, though, that when we did make that statement, when I said that this didn't seem like a tournament that had a lot of upsets that would be manufactured, I did say that after that, I made that comment that there would likely be several then upsets that would follow. So I feel like I gave people a fair warning at the very least since I made that comment.
That is true. You can hang your hat on that. Although you cursed all of our brackets in every contest we were in once you said that. So shout out to you.
I had literally one team in the Elite Eight correct and none in the Final Four. So
I didn't do too bad. I have 2 in the Final Four and I almost had 3. If Duke would have beat Kansas, I would have had 3 of the 4.
You did have Michigan, if I remember correctly.
Yes. I called that from the start. So that's my go-to right now is, oh yeah, I knew that was going to happen.
Completely. I mean, yeah, you look a lot smarter now.
Yeah.
I had 3 Big Ten teams, and the one that I didn't pick to get there is the one that got there.
Of course. See, you need to listen to me, and I need to not listen to you.
Yeah.
And then we would have had a perfect bracket.
I think that is really what the key is there.
Of course. Yeah.
Lot to talk about this time of year. I know tomorrow is going to be one of your favorite days because it's opening day.
Oh, yes.
This weekend, we've got the Final Four. The Masters is coming up. So the transition from March to April is always a fun time. So first I want to talk about opening day baseball because that's probably something I know very little about. Or I know it's something I know very little about, but something that you're much more knowledgeable about. And my knowledge of baseball is about the $7 hot dogs and the $12 beer.
Which
every 2 or 3 innings.
Which halfway through the season, I think that's where we all just end up at because all our hopes and dreams are smashed. But right now, I mean, we're still riding high. You know, we're winning the championship. And, yeah, so this is the best time of year, in my opinion.
So, and you should know that Brant is a diehard Red Sox fan.
Nomar Garcia Parra, he's my boy. I'm telling you, I grew up idolizing him. Became a Red Sox fan, and then I can proudly say I was there during the crappy years, so I get to enjoy the championships and I get to revel in that. I'm not a bandwagon fan.
Well, that's rare these days.
It is.
My extent of Red Sox knowledge is basically everything that you see in Fever Pitch. So
you're a diehard too. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm kind of like Jimmy Fallon, right?
Of course.
And I love it. I did like to, when I was younger, I watched a lot more baseball because what else are you going to do in the summer? So I did like those Red Sox teams of like David Ortiz and Pedro Martinez and Manny Ramirez. Like I enjoyed watching them play, but now,
in the fights with the Yankees, I mean, those were epic. Throwing Don Zimmer down.
Oh, that's one of my favorite fights of all time, I think. That image
that's so
of Pedro
good.
Just throwing Don's, grabbing him by the head, throwing him down. It sounds a little morbid. Say that, but like, it's a classic fight. Like, it's something that when you Google or YouTube Red Sox Yankees, it has to be one of the first videos or images that pops up, right? I can't do that. I don't have my computer in front of me, but
yeah, and it's, you know, I think everyone's been talking about, oh, this is the renewed rivalry between the Red Sox and the Yankees, and nothing's been really that intense and that entertaining to watch since those just bitter rivals where there were fights You know, Pedro's throwing in on people all the time, getting people ticked off. You know, it was just a great, great time. And I actually miss those days. I know baseball says we can't allow fights. You know, that's not good for a game, but I do miss it. I miss sort of that hockey aspect where there's tension. Just, you know, throw a few punches, get it out, and let's move on. So, of course. Well, that's me being a pitcher who like to throw high and inside, right?
You got to throw that chin music. Throw that chin
yeah,
music.
There we go. Yeah.
Well, okay, so every commissioner of every league is now saying that fighting is bad for our league. They have for quite some time, but number one, false.
Right.
I mean, what do we all think about? I always think about, this is personally, I always think, go back to like the 90s NBA, and as a big Pacers fan, I loved when Reggie Miller and those bad boy Pacers would take on the bad boy Knicks teams, and you just have a scruffle in the lane yeah. every time somebody tried to drive. And, I mean, I love seeing benches clear in baseball. It's like, that's a pastime.
Me too. And, I mean, even like recently, even the internal turmoil, like when Bryce Harper and you know, Jonathan Papelbon were fighting each other in the dugout. Oh. I mean, that stuff, like you're just saying, yeah, like I want to see that in a ring. You know, I would pay money for that.
Yes.
And, but it also it goes to, it really gets you excited about a rivalry. And it's hard to say we have true rivalries anymore where people just don't like each other. And that's entertaining to watch them go at it. I mean, when we were younger, it was like Knicks and the Heat. You know,
oh, yeah.
Playoffs.
Van Gundy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I just watched a video. It was like the anniversary of Marcus Camby taking a swing at somebody, and they end up nailing Jeff Van Gundy.
Oh,
I mean, just some of those classic moments, you just don't see it anymore. And I think it's out of, like, you know, this aspect of we can't have fighting in our league. But those are some of the most memorable moments.
Oh, I agree. It's what we grew up on. I mean, whether that's good or bad or indifferent. But, okay, so this is my theory, and I want to run this by you because, first of all, let me ask you a question. Are the Yankees and both in New York, are the Yankees and Red Sox, are they playing games in overseas this year? Did I hear that right?
Yes, so they are going over to London, I believe. Okay. And they are taking the game there, trying to spread baseball internationally, which I don't think is a terrible idea, but London is sort of a strange place to start.
Right.
But I mean, it's bringing what they call rivalry. And I think they're building that rivalry aspect over there to get fans excited. But yeah, it's going to be an international game played over in London.
See, to me, that's a sign that the rivalry, maybe not dead, but it's not as heated as it once was, because you're going to want those games to be played in Boston and New York. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but my opinion has been, and this works for the Cubs too, that rivalry kind of died when the Red Sox won the World Series, did it not? I mean, because yeah. they had this huge obstacle, which was always for the Red Sox, the Yankees. And they were kind of the big brother where they would, you know, stick their arm out on the forehead of the Red Sox and kind of prevent them from getting this World Series ring. And it's the same thing with the Cubs, and that was the rest of baseball, and then the Cubs couldn't get it. So now almost the allure of the Red Sox-Yankees where, okay, are the Red Sox actually going to do it this year, is gone. And the same thing with the Cubs. Like, it's the Cubs versus the world. Well, not so much anymore because, one, they won the World Series, and, two, now they're really good.
Right.
So I want your thoughts as a true baseball fan and insider, quote unquote.
I've got sources opinion. Everywhere, man. Sources everywhere.
Hey, you've been to multiple stadiums. That's inside, right? Inside baseball.
One of my bucket lists is to go to every stadium. So I've been to quite a bit in my travels for work, but hoping to hit all of them soon.
Yeah, that's inside.
I would agree with you. I do think, you know, when the Red Sox came all the way back from being down 3-0 and went on and won the World Series, it just took away that, you know, the edge that they played with. And since then, I mean, they've really become, you know, what the Yankees were for years prior, is just the ones, you know, the team that's going to go out and they're going to offer the big contracts. They're going to get all the best players coming there. And it just seems like an unfair advantage. And it pains me to say that because I love the winning. I love the championships. But it's, you know, nothing quite beat that underdog mentality that led to just really great rivalry games. You know, that, you know, you had fighting, but then you also had this really competitive matchup between them every year, every series. And it's different now, to say the least.
Yeah. And I think that you see that in, like I said, with the Cubs now, because now, you know, I watched the World Series, the Cubs-Indians World Series, because neither team had won a World Series in forever, and literally for the Cubs forever. And, and last year, I didn't care. Like, I remember going up to Indiana in late August to visit my family, and my grandpa and my dad are big Cubs fans. And we got to a point where it was late August, and I'm like, are they going to even make the playoffs? I had no clue. Didn't know what their record was. Didn't know if they were good, bad. I didn't know what. And I just remember, like, watching the Cubs before they'd won the World Series, not as a diehard fan, but just like, is this going to be the year? Is this going to be? And so I would watch some late season Cubs games or flip them on whenever. But now I'm like, they won the World Series. There's really nothing left for me to watch in baseball at this moment, except for maybe I might watch the Yankees with that lineup that they've got, my God. But I think it just kind of goes away. And I don't want to say the worst thing in baseball was for the Cubs and the Red Sox to win a World Series, but I think that for people like myself, and this is just me speaking as like not a common fan, but just, I don't even know what I would say. Not that interested. Don't have a team. Going to turn it on for the general interest value. I don't
a
really
casual know. Fan.
Casual fan. I guess yes. You could call it
that. Like casual so, Fridays. You're a yeah, casual yeah. Friday fan.
Yeah. There you go. I'm just not watching those games anymore because there's not that mystique, I guess you could say.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, last year, I'm a diehard baseball fan. I love it. And now I just find myself rooting, okay, who hasn't won, you know, a championship in the longest time frame?
Right.
And, you know, like last year, I was rooting for the Astros because, you know, I remember Jose Altuve is about the only one left over from the god-awful Astros where they just basically sold off all their players. They drafted really well. And it worked out, but, you know, he was the only one there from the start of that. And so, you know, just trying to find these small stories to root for. And it's so strange because it's not really, you know, what we used to grow up rooting for, you know, where it was teams that was watching them, you know, rooting for them day in, day out. And now it's more of a casual experience.
Well, now that we've talked about, you know, the past 20 years, I want to just tell me your thoughts about opening day, what you'll be watching, who you'll be watching, or you can just give me whatever you want to talk about because I really don't know anything about it. So whatever you want to talk about, you have this great platform to speak on.
I could go deep on you because I'm in a dynasty league with, you know, minor league players. So, like, I am researching who's got a shot to make it to the majors in 5 years. So I can go as deep as you want to go on this one.
Well, I'm going to give you control here. And then I'm going to throw out random baseball movies, I think is what I'm going to do. You can also great. Cause that's seriously. So this is before I turn this over to you temporarily. Our plan tomorrow is we always buy hot dogs. My wife and I always buy hot dogs on opening day. We eat hot dogs, have some chips, either beer or soda, and then we watch Rookie of the Year, The Sandlot, and then we watch a few innings of baseball, and we'll probably watch 6 to 9 innings tomorrow, and then after that, I'll probably watch another 4 to 5 until the World Series.
There we go. You got to get it in early. And this is the best time. I mean, you'll see your best baseball day one.
That's true.
Because then you're going to have all these injuries, and people are going to suck that shouldn't have and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But everybody's in it.
Yeah. So, I mean, this year, I'm excited about this year just because, you know, there's a lot of big names that move teams and, you know, you got like the Phillies and the Twins and the Giants and the Brewers who all got major pieces this offseason. So they go from being, you know, kind of terrible teams. I mean, the Twins made the wild card, but in a crappy division. But, you know, they went all in for this year, so it'd be interesting to see how that pans out. And then, you know, like the Brewers added a couple of great outfielders And suddenly they're contending with the Cubs for a division title. But then also, I think kind of the underlying theme throughout the year will be, you know, this is a contract year for Bryce Harper. So, you know, is he going to – you probably expect a big year from him, but is he going to stay with Washington? A lot of people are saying, oh, you know, he's going to the Cubs. They're throwing out other names. It's all wild speculation at this point, but it'd be interesting to see how he does. And then, sadly, this will be the last year for Chief Wahoo.
I know. That is one of the things that breaks my heart.
I get that it's a very offensive logo. I get that. But that is, like, iconic Cleveland Indian. I mean, when you think of Cleveland Indians, that's what you think of.
Right. Well, now, it's if I'm not mistaken, is that just – that's just for the team, right? They're still going to have gear with his logo, with that logo on it?
See, like, I've heard different things. I've heard that they're no longer making new, you know, things with his logo on it. But I don't know. I know definitely off the cap and off the jersey.
So what is likely going to happen is they're going to probably try to sell everything they do already have, and then just nothing else is going to come in with that shipment. They're just not going to they're not going to take everything they have with Chief Wahoo off the rack.
Yeah.
Not get their money for it. Might as well get the dollar, right?
Sure, yeah. Fire sale, $2 shirts, the works.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting topic. And it makes you wonder how long, too, that's going to have the effect with, like, the Washington Redskins. How soon before they have a different logo, probably even a different name, because while it might survive the next 20 or 30 years, I can't imagine that when – I don't even know what this group of children, college-age students, high school students is called – Gen Z, Gen Y, Millennial, I don't know what they're called.
I have no idea.
But I can't imagine that when we get up to that, into those type of positions and those young people get into those type of positions, I can't imagine that that name is going to stick around. But that's a different topic for a different day. I just said I was going to throw out baseball. So Little Big League, baseball movie, Little Big League.
Oh, yeah. Favorite. Classic. I love that one. Although I don't think there is much of a baseball movie that I don't like.
For love of
not that game. That really helps. Yes. It's one of my favorites just because I'm a pitcher, so that bond there. Telling you, Rookie of the Year was my dream as a kid.
Oh, I know. That's still my dream. I'm like, I could never break my arm.
That and the rookie, I'm thinking there's a shot for me. I just need to go out, severely injure my arm.
Yep.
Let the doctors do their thing. Come out, throw mid-90s. I've got a shot.
Or
I'll go to the bullpen. I don't care.
Or you could.
I don't need to be a starter.
You're not asking for just a closer.
No. I'll even go for setup. I mean, with injuries these days, you know, I'll start in the setup role. Eventually take over the closer. Be John Smoltz for like 4 or 5 years. Yeah. And then say, you know what? We're going to give you the starting role. And then I'm going to be... What's his name? Was it Jamie Moyer, who's in the league, you know, in his 50s, I think?
There's a 50-year-old player?
There was. I think he retired when he was 50.
The problem
is he was left-handed. That's why, you know, I got to get my son thrown left-handed.
Yeah.
It's the only way. I mean, that's my retirement plan. Everything is riding on my son throwing left-handed. Doesn't have to be mid-90s, just, you know, a floater, 75 up there. You know, that's got to be my plan. So
we can't, yeah. And your plan can also not be to break his arm, because that would require like child protective services. We don't want to get into that.
So yeah.
Don't try the Rookie of the Year stuff on. If you want to try it, you can, but not on your son. That probably wouldn't go well.
I will. And, you know, I tried to explain it last time they came out, you know, when I was trying to break the arms. It did not go well. So you're right. Need to probably throw that idea out.
Yeah, I just want to look out for you. I don't want you to be all of a sudden saying, well, he told me to do it. Have you not seen the movie?
Yeah, but the podcast could go viral then. You know, when I'm like mainstream news, I'll just say, you know what? I'm really sorry for what I did. Check out this podcast, The Secondary. It's on Anchor. You'll really like it.
We talked about it actually live as it was happening. So.
Exactly.
What is your favorite baseball movie? Do you have one? Is it anything? Can it be anything other than The Sandlot?
See, I like Sandlot. It was not my favorite though.
Okay.
And I know that's like a little. I mean, it's hard to say that, and I get a lot of grief for that.
I'm not going to give you grief. I just don't. So I'm just kind of going through my head, and I'm kind of a sinner here because I've not seen Field of Dreams.
Oh jeez.
Yeah, I know, right? So
Sandlot, I'm offended.
Sandlot is at the top for me, but I don't know a lot of other baseball movies. So if it's not Sandlot, then what is your top pick?
See, Field of Dreams is a classic. Rookie of the Year is another one of my favorites. See, I like basketball, which is sort of a mixed genre there.
Well, does that count?
And see, that's where I'm at because it's sort of in its own category,
mm-hmm.
and it's close, but that's another one. But I, For the Love of the Game is one of my favorites.
That is a good one.
So that's probably got to be number one for me.
All right. Well, I actually own that movie. I am a fan of it. It's just, it's a little bit more feely than I like to be.
When I'm, see, I'm an emotional guy, so that it really gets me.
That's true.
Yeah, just don't tell anybody about this, okay?
We'll keep that
between us.
We'll, yeah, I'll keep that on the down low.
Perfect.
What other, what else are you going to be looking for tomorrow? Are there any big marquee matchups that you're interested in? Any pitchers duels that are going on, or anything of that nature? I mean, honestly, I looked at the tweets about food, and that was that's what I was excited about. Just tweets about ballpark food. That's what gets me excited.
Well, and looking at some of the ballpark food, like they are taking it over the top, and I forget where I found it. It was some website. I'll have to find it again, but it was like some of these over-the-top food items that are at each ballpark. I tell you, the food is just as good as the baseball that you watch there. It's great. Like San Francisco, they have garlic fries.
Ooh.
Life-changing. My life is it's not been the same since I've had those.
All right.
Diamondbacks has like – it's like some chili cheese dog evolution. I don't even know what it is. So that's on my list. It's not human, and it's not a hot dog. It's somewhere in between.
You don't have time to really kind of take a glimpse of what you're eating. You just shovel it in.
Oh, yeah. Because if you're looking down while you're trying to eat, I mean, that's when you're going to get a ball right to the face.
Yeah.
And that's never a good thing.
No, that's my constant fear whenever I go to a baseball game.
I know. It's nuts, especially with some of these bat speeds, like,
mm-hmm.
say the Yankees, if you're gonna close your eyes or look away while you go through Judge, Stanton, and Sanchez, like, you're just an idiot is what you are, because I mean, those balls are gonna be coming at you like 150 miles an hour. You better hope they go out of the yard and not into the stands.
Well, that's why I just try to drink as much beer as possible, because that at that point I figure if I get hit by a baseball, it's gonna hurt a lot less.
That's true. It'll just roll right off, right?
Yeah, I'll be able to take. I just don't want to catch it in my cup.
There we go. But. Well, you know, a couple of things that are happening throughout the year. Pujols, he needs 32 hits to become the fourth player in history to hit 600 home runs and 3,000 hits.
Ooh.
So, like, that's going to come up fairly quick, and I mean, he's definitely going to get it this year, unless he somehow gets hurt, which isn't out of the question. Because he has like what, 52 now, something like that.
How much time does he? Do you know off the top of your head how much time he has off on his contract left? Like, he signed a 10-year deal, but
yeah, it's over 5 years. I know that, but I want to say he's looking at like 45, 46 is his age when his contract's up.
Wow,
I think it's right around that. So yeah, I mean it's just crazy. But at least he'll get, you know, these accomplishments in an Angels uniform. So there's that. And then also, CC Sabathia needs 154 strikeouts to get to 3,000 strikeouts, which is quite the accomplishment for a pitcher. So those are like two big mile markers that I think we'll probably get we'll get to this season. It'd be really great to see both those guys get that.
Okay, so Pujols knee. This is I would. Oh boy, I want to ask this question, but it's going to sound really stupid. But so I'm just gonna ask. Who do you think who takes fewer games to get to their accomplishment, Sabathia or Pujols? Because I can't say number of games because Pujols is going to play every day and Sabathia is going to play every five, so that really doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But who do you think in the number of games? You think Sabathia's got the more powerful arm, or is Pujols going to knock out 32 hits relatively quickly?
I think Pujols gets 32 hits pretty quickly because I mean playing in division with Seattle, which. You know, if you can name a pitcher, well, I guess King Felix, after King Felix, if you can name a pitcher, I'll give you $10.
Prince.
Yeah, there we go. And, but, I mean, nobody knows any other starter that they have. So I think probably against Seattle alone, he'll get 32 hits.
In one game.
In one game, probably. That's the way it's going to work out. So I think he'll get there quicker. Sabathia, this late in his career, I wouldn't be surprised if it takes most of the year for him to get to 154. Because he used to be a 200K guy. And these last few years with injuries and just, you know, the way he pitches, he's not getting up there that much anymore. So I think it's Pujols on this one.
All right, well. The only way we, I mean, the only way probably he doesn't is if he gets injured. So that was, I guess, kind of my question.
That's true.
After
well,
I,
both
after,
of them will
after
get
I was,
injured this year.
Thought about it and was like, well, that's going to be a really stupid question. But I had already committed to it and decided I was going to ask it anyway.
You got to appreciate the follow through. It's all about the follow through.
Never give up. Never give up. Speaking of never give up. Well, first of all, before we move on, do you have anything else on baseball? Because I don't want to cut you short. I know you love baseball, so if there's anything else that you're looking
and this this will probably be the last time we talk about baseball too, right? Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily. I mean, if there's something interesting that happens, I'll give you the floor a few times. You can talk okay. not as much baseball. I'm not going to give you that, but we can
I'm
talk baseball on occasion.
Well, I mean, if we want to talk about WHIP, you know, the K9 stats, if we want to get into that, I mean, I would love that opportunity.
I'm going to have to find something else to do at that point. I'm going to try to find something that I can counterbalance. So you can talk about that,
yeah.
And then I'll throw out, like, amazing ballpark sandwiches and food or something. That
there we go.
Might work.
You had me at try hot dogs and baseball, I'm telling you.
There we go.
Probably the last thing I want to just throw out there is we've seen this shift of all these young guys being brought up fairly quick in their careers. And just, you know, trying to figure out Major League Baseball on the fly. I think the past couple of years we've had people come up from Double A straight to the majors and stick. And, you know, Andrew Benintendi is one with the Red Sox. He came up from Double A and just didn't stop hitting and just stayed up there. So it's exciting because we have, you know, Ohtani coming over from Japan, who's a dual player. He pitches and plays the field. So it'd be interesting to see how he plays. And then you got Vlad Guerrero Jr., who is essentially the Vlad clone and is mashing homers just like his dad. He'll be up in the majors soon. And then Ronald Acuna from Atlanta. Probably going to be brought up in April, and I don't think he'll leave after he's brought up in April. And he's going to be a star. So it's just exciting to see the young guys come up and really hold their own in the major leagues.
You're like right up there with Tim Kirkchen, and I can't even.
I'm telling you.
He's
one of my sources, you know, among my other sources that
of course.
Are sources of other sources that have sources. Sources.
Just throw it out. You got credibility.
You know, sources.
I mean, it works for you.
Exactly.
All right. So now that we're done with baseball talk, we'll move on to the next big topic. And that is, of course, this weekend, Final Four. And I kind of mentioned the last time we talked that I'm not the guy who really likes to see the lower seeds get into the Final Four. So with Loyola Chicago getting in, you'd think I'd be really unhappy that an 11 seed is in the Final Four. However, when I watch them play and I look at their record and I've seen some of the stuff they did throughout the regular season, I'm not sure that's an 11 seed in the Final Four. I'm not convinced that team wasn't worthy of a 5 or 6 seed, maybe even higher. But they just don't have the kind of past credibility. Like you look at Gonzaga and Wichita State, they had to build up years and years and years. Like, how long was Gonzaga or Wichita State an 8, 9, 10, 11 seed before they finally got respect and started getting those 1, 2, 3, 4 seeds? And I think that's kind of what you saw with Loyola Chicago. Yeah, they were good. They didn't have that success in the recent past, so they're an 11 seed. So to make a long point even longer, I think that Loyola Chicago is easily one of the top 20 teams in the country, and I don't think we can look at that 11 seed and say that this is a Cinderella team necessarily.
I agree. I thought their seeding was wrong. I mean, to your point, they played a great year, but they just didn't have that credibility on their side. And I will say, like, the stats geek in me, when they won, and I don't think I picked them in a single bracket I had, I'm like, how did I miss Loyola Chicago? And I'm, you know, looking back at their past games, and I tell you, they shoot the ball so well. The last three games, their field goal percentage is 57%, 55%, and 50%. And I mean, if you're shooting that way in a tournament, it's going to be really hard to beat you. And on top of that, they're out rebounding teams, and they have, you know, great assist numbers. They're a team that I think probably well deserved get to the Final Four. Obviously had a few breaks come their way, but I mean, they're a tough team.
Well, I'll give credit to my brother, because before the tournament started, he had them in the Elite Eight, and I kind of dismissed it, and I was like, this is some sort of joke bracket or something. But he works at the University of Florida, and he was I don't know if he actually attended that game or if he just watched it on television, but he was like, no, Loyola Chicago beat Florida, and they looked solid doing it. Like, it wasn't just some fluke game where Florida played terrible and Loyola Chicago took advantage. He's like, no, Loyola Chicago is a good team, and they can get to the Elite Eight. He didn't have them getting to the Final Four, mainly because he didn't have, you know, Virginia losing. But,
right.
You know, that's a solid team. So, you know, every year I complain, like, George Mason and Butler and UConn, when they were those lower seeds, or Virginia Commonwealth, I complained. I was like, this is going to be a fantastic Final Four. But I think that this might actually, like, Michigan and Loyola Chicago, I think we're going to have a good game. And I'm not going to be – this isn't going to be a traditional year for me where I look at Loyola Chicago and look at that 11 seed and like, well, this is crap. Because I really do think that they are a top 20 team, and they just didn't have the credibility all year.
Yeah. No, I'd agree. I think you're going to have – there are two teams that are just – they're playing really well, and it's going to come down to who's going to win, you know, the rebounding war, and who's going to turn the ball over more. And I think it's going to be that side of the game that you're looking at, really two of those scrappy stats on who moves on to go to the finals. But I mean, both of them are just playing so well right now.
Yeah, and Michigan has been really fun, but that was a team that we thought probably could get to the Final Four just based on, because they have so many matchup problems for so many other teams. And so I didn't think that was too surprising. But their path wasn't quite as difficult as they didn't have to go through North Carolina.
Right.
They didn't have to go through Xavier. So Michigan, I think, I don't want to say the jury's still out on them, but
they've not really been tested much yet.
I've been more impressed with Loyola, I guess is what I could say there, than I have been with Michigan. But that shouldn't take anything away from Michigan, because they played really well too.
And I will say Michigan, they don't turn the ball over.
Mm-hmm.
And any team, like in the tournament, that just does not turn the ball over, and they, you know, some of those other stats, you know, like getting steals and, you know, high assist numbers, if you're doing that stuff well, I mean, you just set yourself up to really win and go deep into the tournament. Because, I mean, it really comes down to some of those, you know, breaks in the game. You got to get that extra rebound or, you know, when everyone's turned the ball over, you're not, and you're getting those extra possessions. So, you know, that's where I think Michigan, they've had a lot of breaks along the way, but also, you know, they're doing some of those little things well.
And then if you look at the other side of the bracket, you have Villanova and Kansas, and two teams that have probably been about as dominant as you could say for this tournament anyway, especially Villanova. I'm not really sure if I could see anybody beating Villanova just by the way they've played in the tournament. Kansas probably poses a pretty good threat, but I don't know. I would say now if we had to re-pick this, I would pick Villanova as my champion. And I don't – do you have another thought on that? Do you think that Kansas or Michigan or Loyola could – I mean, anything can happen, obviously, but is Villanova not the favorite? I mean, maybe you're seeing something that I'm not.
I think they have all the advantages now. I mean, they're probably the best rebounding team left in the Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
And what sort of scares me with them is they've had a couple of games, you know, two of their last three, they've shot under 40% from the field goal. You know, that's their field goal percentage. And then, you know, free throws is obviously a strong suit. So I think if the game is close at all, I think Villanova is set up to win those close games. But what I think this is going to turn into is essentially a 3-point shooting match. Because both teams shoot three-pointers like it's their job. I think, like, Villanova and Alabama, Villanova shot 41 threes in that game, which is insane.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, they're shooting on average 24 the previous two games. And then, you know, same with Kansas. They're just shooting so many threes, shooting a good percentage, over, you know, 36% from three. So I think it's going to come down to that. And we see it with the Warriors in the NBA. Three is more than two. So if you knock down a bunch of threes, it doesn't matter how good Villanova's playing. You know, Kansas can better him that way. But I think we'll know really early if shots are falling for Kansas, they've got a good shot.
Yeah, I think this is going to be I think it's going to be interesting because you look at the right side of the bracket and you see Villanova and Kansas, and I think those two teams have been a little bit more tested. Those brackets haven't really had the same chaos as the other side. So it's going to be interesting to see who that benefits when we get to the championship. Do you have a favorite? Because I got to tell you, as much as I just want to put Michigan in that final bracket, I think that Loyola might get to the championship game, and they may – like, my championship game would be Loyola-Villanova based on what I've seen so far. But I don't know. Maybe there's – maybe Loyola's luck runs out. But I think that they're so good, and they're underappreciated. And I think that everybody just considers this team a Cinderella. But I'm just not sold on the fact that this is just some fluke run. And so – I don't know. I would put Loyola and Villanova in the championship game. Those would be my picks to win. But I might just be, you know, high on Sister Jean or, you know.
Well, there's worse things to be high on, let me tell you. No, I'm really with you. I mean, they've just proven that they're just shooting the ball well. They're not, you know, shooting a ton of threes. But, I mean, the threes that they are shooting, they're making them at a high percentage. They're a really good free throw shooting team. They're just solid. I mean, they're not like blowing people out of the water in certain areas, but they're just solid. So, you know, I think Michigan's got to play solid as well. And then probably, you know, get a few more threes to fall and beat them in the, you know, shooting part of the game. But Loyola is, I don't think this is a runaway by any means. I don't think they're necessarily an underdog either. I think it's fairly much, it's pretty much a push game for me, to be honest. You know, since they haven't had a bad shooting game, you'd hate for that to pop up in the Final Four. But I mean, it is more pressure. I wouldn't be shocked. So I mean, that's something to keep an eye on. But you know, Villanova, they're probably most set up to win everything. I mean, they shoot free throws the best out of all the teams. And then they're one of the best defensive teams too. So really, I mean, it's a toss up between Loyola and Michigan. And then I think Villanova is going to get to the finals. And then I think Villanova is just best set up to win it all.
I think I'm going to say the same thing. I think Villanova is going to walk away as champion on Monday night for what would that be? Second time in 3 years.
Yeah.
I don't know that it comes down to a last second 3-point shot that just crushes your soul.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that. Okay. That's okay. What, a billion years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, yeah. Why are we still talking about it? I mean, it's just
too long ago. Well, I hate to bring up those memories. I'm sorry.
I mean, we were what, in second grade? You know, it's just such a long time ago. I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. Well, we will not let, even though we talked about baseball in second grade, we won't go back to Final Four is that long ago, apparently.
Now you got me crying. Thanks, man.
Well, we've already touched on that you're emotional. I think everybody else understands now.
I know. So close. I mean, the perfect shot from Paige.
As a huge sports fan, was that – because I can't imagine losing, and I'm trying to think myself of what a more heartbreaking type of loss is. Is there anything that trumps that for you, like personally?
I don't think so. Like it was the strangest feeling. I don't think I've ever had this feeling of when one of my teams loses. It was heartbreaking, but then you like after you take a breath, you're like, what a great game. Like it was just fantastic start to finish. And it's not like, you know, North Carolina necessarily played bad defense on that last play anyway. I mean, they didn't want a foul. They had a hand in his face. The dude made a jumper from like beyond NBA threes. And I mean, it was just one of those games, heartbreaking, but also fantastic.
Maybe you're just more calm. Because, probably. Well, I'm trying to think.
I walked around my house with my hands on my head, like saying, I can't believe that happened. Like, this is awful. I had that moment. But then like after that, all the anger and the hatred towards Villanova subdued. Then I'm like, you know, great game. It was a great game.
I'm trying to think. Like, I've had some of my teams lose, obviously, on last-second shots, but nothing with that kind of magnitude. The closest thing I can think of, and this is really going far back, is when I was younger, I was a big Colts fan, and I loved Jim Harbaugh, the quarterback, not the head coach. And I remember when they played the Steelers, I don't even remember what year it was, maybe 95, 94, 95, something like that. And the AFC Championship game, the Colts just snuck into the playoffs that year. They were down by a touchdown or less. And Harbaugh fired a 50-yard pass. Maybe it wasn't that far. I really remember very little of the detail here. But Harbaugh fires that pass. You think the receiver comes up with it, and the Colts win, and they're going to the Super Bowl. And then it's waved incomplete.
I remember that. That was awful.
I just remember 7-year-old me like breaking down and crying.
Right.
Because I was
like, that was the mega moment of your sports career right there. Yeah, right, and at that moment.
And at that point, I think it had been the mega moment for the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
And it's like you said, like it was something that you had, like the Colts were going to the Super Bowl for like 10 seconds. The Colts were going to the Super Bowl in my head. And then all of a sudden it was gone.
Yeah. It's that wave of like, you're on top of the mountain and then all of a sudden you just fall all the way to the bottom. It is awful.
I also remember feeling that way a little bit, but not quite that bad because it wasn't like a game 7 or anything. But when they called Antonio Davis, Indiana Pacers, New York Knicks, I think this was 1999, Larry Johnson hit a 3 to go ahead in the game and they called Antonio Davis for a foul.
Which was horse, yeah.
So you remember it too.
I remember the call. I do. Because, I mean, okay, Michael Jordan, North Carolina player. I love him now that he's retired.
Mm-hmm.
Being a Pacers fan, I freaking hated the Bulls and Jordan so bad. Like,
oh, yeah.
There were so many good Pacer teams And I mean, that's one of the teams. Like, it's so many good Pacer teams that just went through the wood chipper with Jordan. And then on top of that, the Knicks were good. They were like one of those gritty teams where you had, I think, Chris Childs on there, who was like, I don't even know what you would compare him to now. Just one of those scrappers who just pissed you off.
Yeah. And, Latrell Sprewell.
Charlie Ward, who was actually a really good point guard.
Allen Houston. Yeah.
And then Charles Oakley, who was, I mean, everyone's still scared of him. Even if, I think they're going to be scared of him.
That's true.
Even when he's in a wheelchair, I think people will go the opposite way. I kid you not.
That's a good point. And I don't know which is scarier, like, because Charles Oakley as an old man, like, he's still enormous.
Right.
And now it's like, because I get scared, like, if there's an old person yelling at me or older person, I'm very frightened. Well, it's just very uncomfortable.
And I mean, and also, like, when you get older, your, like, sense of, like, controlling yourself goes out the window. I mean, like, the filters are off. Like, you just don't give a bleep anymore.
But the question is, did Charles Oakley ever care?
No. Well, and that's what makes it even scarier. It's like, he didn't care when he had the self-control. Like, when he's older, like, good luck. He's just going to, like, punch people for no reason. Just as they walk by. He's going to be in a wheelchair. And he's just going to punch you. That's exactly what's going to happen. That is Charles Oakley in a nursing home.
And I feel like Knicks fans will just, like, line up and take it as a badge of honor. Like, I'm going to go down there. Like, Pacers fans, when Larry Bird was the president of the team, they used to form a line in Bankers Life Fieldhouse to get his autograph. That's going to be the same thing for Charles Oakley. He was just going to go up and get punched in the face, the arm, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I got punched by Charles Oakley. Here's my bruise.
Right. Can you sign my bruise, please, man? That's exactly what it's going to be.
Oh, that would be so awesome. I would pay the Knicks, if I had money, I would pay the Knicks money to do that in about 20 years when he's like 70.
That's true. Yeah. Right now, you may not come back the same. Like, if he punches you.
Yeah.
You need to soften the blow a little bit.
Right. You got to give him some time to age a little bit and weaken up.
Of course.
So there was one other topic, and we won't spend a lot of time on it, but one other topic I wanted to get to, because I love this. I don't know that you're as much of a fan of it as I am. Maybe it's like for what baseball is to me, this might be for you, but the Masters is coming up. And I wanted to talk about this for no other reason than the fact that my wife and I told you we won tickets to go to the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill here in Orlando. And Tiger Woods happened to be playing amongst, you know, Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, Ernie Els, a bunch of those other guys. And with the Masters coming up, there's kind of this real sense that, okay, the other four or five times that we've said Tigers was back, that was just kind of a joke. Now he's really back. But when we were at the course, his following was enormous. You could hear the roars from the fans, not actual Tigers roaring.
Although that would be awesome. I mean, I would get into golf if there were actual Tigers following Tiger.
So this is what we need to figure out then, because LSU had, well, they used to have a real live Tiger that would, like, growl at the opposing team, right?
Right.
So how do we get that to follow Tiger Woods around? And every time he makes a 90-foot putt, that Tiger just, like, roars into the face of the opponent.
Somebody's got to give Mike Tyson a call, because he's one that's got, like, a tamed one that I'm sure just does anything he has.
No, I think Wild would be better, though.
That's true.
Just wield a Wild Tiger around.
It would be entertaining from afar. And to also read about the mauling on the news the next day. You know, that'd be great.
So, I think, but to me, it felt a little bit more real. Like, it was almost kind of surreal. Because when we were growing up, and apparently this is about what a lot of this podcast is going to be about, us growing up. But when we were growing up, it was Tiger and Phil, and for a little bit, David Duval before his 2-year run was done. And now he's a nobody on Golf Channel or whatever. There's kind of this urgency to have Tiger back. And the way he's played, and the way the fans are following him, and the way – that, you know, everybody's just hoping, and it kind of seems like Tiger's back. It feels like this might be like the most anticipated Masters, I don't, maybe ever. Maybe, I mean, at least in my adult life, I think. I can't remember one where we've thought, oh boy, this is going to be an incredible field, and now the greatest is back.
Well, I will say this will probably be the first time, probably close to 10 years, that I'll watch golf. And I mean, I used to tune in at least on Sundays, you know, in the Sunday Reds, to watch Tiger just because it was entertaining. And, you know, going back to what we said earlier, where you have somebody who's just on top of the world and just that competitiveness of trying to knock off, you know, the best. And so you root for Phil Mickelson or whoever against Tiger. And then there's also that flip side, which is you're just in awe that somebody is this dominant in a game that is so hard. I mean, we play it like just casually and is the, like, I like playing it and is by far the most frustrating game to play.
Yeah.
And this dude was on top of the game for, you know, a decade. And so I am excited for him to be back. Like, you know, I'm actually going to watch a little bit of golf. It'd be good to get him back on top. Because then also, I think with golf fans, I don't think we realized how good we had it when Tiger was good.
Yep.
And we didn't know until he was just gone. It's just like, well, this isn't fun to watch anymore. I mean, there's not really a dominant guy. We always expected, you know, Rory to take over or, you know, some of these other young golfers just to kind of be the next Tiger. And it shows, like, Tiger's one in a million. And we didn't know how good we had it until, like, you know, he just fell out of golf and nothing was really the same. So I'm excited to see him, you know, get back out there. Obviously, his game's got to be so much different, though. Because, I mean, yeah, he could hit the ball far, but not nearly as far as he used to. And then on top of that, I mean, just the, you know, making sure you're hitting the fairways and getting into the green, because his par fives are where he made the most money, you know, getting those eagles and definitely the birdies. And now that's a little bit more challenging. So it's going to be interesting to see him kind of evolve his game a little bit and hopefully get back on top.
Well, and first, because I know he's going to be listening, I should apologize to David Duval. He was actually my favorite golfer for a while, but he just, like...
Well, I remember the little visor and, I mean, the sunglasses.
He just, yeah, he was great, but my, like, he just vanished. Yeah. And I was like, well, where'd he go? And now, I think he's now on Golf Channel or something like that, and whatever, so my apologies.
Yeah, big shout out to David Duval.
I was just really disappointed that he kind of disappeared from the face of the earth and then I had nobody to root for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, the least he could have done was call. I mean, yeah, he never called.
I mean, yeah, we didn't have text back then or email, so.
That's true.
It's a long time ago. but I think you bring up a valid point. We don't know how good we had it. And you look at some of the other athletes, like Michael Jordan obviously was great, but was he appreciated at his time? Probably not. The same thing right now with LeBron James. The same thing right now with Tom Brady. Like, everybody wants to beat those guys. And then when you look back in 5 years after they retire, you're like, man, that guy was fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I feel like we have the same issue now with Tiger in the sense that, you know, he was a golfer we loved to hate. And we were also like, there was almost, I think, a Tiger fatigue. Where it was like, well, why am I going to watch this? Tiger's going to win by 10 strokes. And what we don't appreciate is that Augusta went back and they changed the freaking course to make it harder for him to win.
Right, right. And I mean, who does that in any other sport? Who says,
right,
okay, this course is too easy for one guy, so let's change it. I mean, that doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah. And that's something that we didn't appreciate, and now all of a sudden, now that he's back, we're like, oh, this is like, it's like, it, like, this is our, like, if we were drug addicts, this would be our cocaine.
Right, right.
Like, oh.
Right. Like, I'll take another.
He's back. Give us more. Yeah,
I'll take another hit, please.
But it's just one of those things where for so long, because I was the same as you. I was always rooting for Phil. You wanted somebody to beat Tiger. You didn't want him to break Jack Nicklaus's record. And now when you have 5 years without him, you're like, or yeah, however long it's been, you're like, and that guy was kind of good and he was kind of fun to watch.
Yeah.
Even if you don't like him and if you're not a fan of Tiger, like, I don't know that I would be the biggest Tiger Woods fan, but what I can tell you is that if he's got a lead or if he's in contention, that it's more interesting because A, you want to see him win and try to get to that elite level that Jack Nicklaus was at, or B, you want to see your guy, whatever, beat the greatest that has ever been, and you want to see a good round of golf or good four rounds of golf or whatever you want to phrase it.
Right.
So that's just, it's just something that's interesting to me. I didn't, like I said, I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on it because it is golf and we can probably talk about it later after the Masters is done. But that's just one of the things that's going to be really interesting. And since it's coming up with so much other things on the docket, I had to get it in. I had to get my Tiger talk in.
Yeah.
We'll work on getting a real Tiger to Augusta in 2 weeks.
I'm sure that'll be easy to do. You know, we'll make a call.
I don't think...
I'm sure I've got a source who has a source who's got a source.
Yeah, well, you have lots of sources. Maybe source. We can get him an honorary green jacket, too.
That's true. Well, I can get you one. Now, granted, you can't be seen in public with it. There's going to be reports out there about some green jacket missing. Just ignore those. It's not your green jacket. But, again, don't be seen in public with it.
All right, so this is like the Tom Brady jersey and situation.
Yeah, which is also funny you bring that up because that was one of the most ridiculous things I heard. Because I'm thinking, who freaking cares about a jersey? Like, it's literally one in a million for him. And you've already won like so many Super Bowls. It's not like your first championship jersey. Who cares?
Right. Well, was it even his last? Was it? It was his last, right? Like, I mean, he could win another one, but as of right now, yeah, it would be his last.
Well, it's all when Giselle says no more.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Because she runs, you know, the Patriots in a sense, is what it comes down to.
I mean, yeah. Either you believe Bill Belichick or Giselle. I think Tom Brady's just stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. I'm just going to go out and throw footballs. I'll do what my wife tells me. I'll do what my coach tells me. Whatever.
Right. He's got no idea what he's doing. This is all luck. That's all it is. Giselle, it's Belichick, and it's luck. That's all it is.
Well, I mean, the right guy at the right time, right?
There we go. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it, unless you have anything else to offer before we cut ties on our second episode.
I don't think so. We pretty much covered a lot of ground. Again, I'll brush up on my K9 talk. We can get into, you know, the FIP and the whip aspects of baseball next time. So I'm bunkering down on that. I'm excited.
Yes, I will look forward to that as well. And I'm going to look up some of the best menu items I can find across baseball and interject them when you're talking about whip.
So essentially, it's just going to be an ongoing sentence of you and I talking at the same time, right?
Yes, it's going to be one long run-on sentence for 30 minutes.
So there we go. There's the hook for the next show. Tune in for just two people randomly talking about baseball and food at the same time.
I think that's going to be a quick seller.
I mean, I would jump on that.
I know. Well, that will do it for another episode of The Secondary with Dustin Schutte and Brant Petz. Look for us again next week.
All right. See you guys.
This was The Secondary Podcast with Dustin Schutte and Brant Petz.